Right then, I'm joined by Stuart Lee, comedian of this parish and comedian of the parish of Leicester Square as well at the moment, because he's got a residency there with his show, Vegetable Stew, and he's here to talk about it. Hello, Stuart.
All right, thanks for having us on.
Are you a vegetarian?
No, I'm not. I called it that because normally the last four or five shows I've written, they've got like a through line. They're about something and they've got a beginning and a middle and end, and this one's just a sort of mess of different stuff because I'm doing a new series for BBC Two next year, so I'm trying to get kind of 6 half-hours together, so I change it around every night.
Oh, you see, I thought living in Stoke Newington, you could well be a vegetarian. It would have been the correct territory.
Well, I would have been maybe in the 90s. Yeah. But if I was one of the original sort of vegetarian squatters of Stoke Newington, I would now have been priced out. In fact, I pretty much was priced out, and then I got a telly series, and I thought,
oh, well, that's handy.
I can stay now in Hackney. I don't know where the people that aren't on telly live, you know, in London now, but it's expensive, isn't it?
It's extraordinary, that, isn't it? I mean, Hackney, which for many years was a byword for, not exactly poverty, but for, you know, kind of edginess and front lines and murder miles and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I think it's still the poorest borough in Britain, but it's like anywhere. There's sort of this there's a massive disparity now in age.
What, between those who are on telly and those who aren't?
Those on telly. You don't want to sound like that guy that's just been sacked, do you, and go, you've never had it so good. No. Clearly it's not the case. But yeah, it's amazing how places change. I mean, I've been in London long enough to see that happen. You know, the places that they get colonised by artists because they're the cheaper place to live. Then they like change the vibe of the area, and then they get priced out themselves. It's an endless cycle, isn't it?
London is like that, though. It is this constantly of changing city. I mean, whoever, you know, I mean, I grew up here, and growing up in a city where, so if someone had told me that Hoxton would be fashionable, you know, back in the 1970s, if you'd have been clever, you'd have bought it for about £8, all of it.
Well, no, I remember when a guy set up, it's on Curtin Road, the Comedy Cafe, in about 91-92, bought these premises and set up a comedy venue there, Noel Faulkner, and people going, why have you done this, you know, this will never take off. And I think he sold it 15 years later when it was where all city boys went out for a night out, you know. Bizarre.
When you're doing a show like this one, as you said, you're kind of, is it, to what degree are you working out new material, are you trying stuff out, is it?
Well, what I try and do, I try and find all the bits that aren't written, right? All the bits that...
What does that mean?
Well, the bits where you can improvise, the bits where you can stretch an idea around.
What, sort of gaps? And
gaps, yeah. I mean, and then hopefully what you're left with at the end is the jokes are little pegs to sort of mess around with on. And it's funny, when I did the last series, the script that all the kind of execs liked the best, I knew it was the worst one, because it was the one that read the most like a funny newspaper article. You know, it's a piece of prose, whereas the best ones are just where you've got brackets, talks about shops here, and cats or something, and you don't really, you know, it's kind of keeping it, trying to remember that it is a live art form.
And is it different every night, or is it, I mean, to what degree does it
vary?
Well,
it'll be different by the end of the run to what it is at the start. At the moment, different sorts of things change every night. I mean, last night was quite a good fun one, lots of weird stuff happened, and you kind of hope something will happen in the room almost, that or there'll be an odd response to something that will mean you have to come at it from a different angle, and then hopefully by the end of 2 months you've got all these different options covered.
I was having this discussion the other day with someone who was a comedian. And they were saying it's a terrible thing being a comedian as opposed to being a musician. Because if you're a musician, people want you to play the same songs every time. Yeah. If you're a comedian, you do the same joke again. They get really unhappy.
Well, I normally turn around stuff like every year. But yesterday there were some guys in saying they'd come because they'd heard a bit played on the radio by Richard Bacon of me talking about Top Gear. And they wanted to see that, and I hadn't done it. And it was from last year's show, which is what is recorded. It's kind of gone, you know. But you don't normally get people calling out for the stuff.
For the greatest hit. It doesn't quite work like does it? It's sort of the opposite. Really.
Well, I think it's because people think comedy's about sort of surprise, you know. They sort of think, oh, I wouldn't expect you to do that. With me, I try to remove the element of surprise and make it completely obvious what I'm going to do.
Well, there is a DVD, of course, so people can study that, which is If You Prefer a Milder Comedian.
Yeah.
Is that what? Was that last year's show?
Last year's show, yeah. I mean, I sort of, well, I, it's funny how I get ideas, you know. I had a kind of altercation in a Cafe Nero who refused to accept my loyalty card because the stamps were the wrong colour.
And
they
thought you'd been home stamping.
Yeah, that's what they thought. They thought I'd been home stamping. Yeah, they thought I was that desperate.
That is some sort of fraud,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Stamping your own card.
And Then I looked on the thing and it said, if you prefer a milder coffee, please ask for one. Then I started thinking about all other stuff and like how comedy's now about people kind of manufacturing anger about trivial things. And I thought, well, that's quite a good way of looking at that subject. You know, there's kind of everyone now you know, thousands of more people are going to see live stand-up than ever before, and yet it strikes me as being slightly hilarious when he's, you know, it's like this massive event now, and you see it on telly, and some guy will walk out on Live at the Apollo through loads of like smoke and lighting effects, and then start talking about something that happened in Sainsbury's. It's really sort of like, it seems to have got to a point of being almost ludicrous, a bit like your generation would have said about Yes and Genesis, and then you had to have a punk thing come along to kind of change it all. And I wonder if that's on the horizon again with comedy.
Well, it does seem to, I mean, you know, each to their own, but the idea of going to watch comedy at the O2 or going to watch comedy at Wembley or something, to me, is just ludicrous.
Yeah.
Because it is an intimate medium.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't work for me.
I think there's a cut-off point beyond which it's difficult to have a good gig, and the cut-off point is the 350 seats of the Leicester Square Theatre
of course,
where I am for the next
which
month.
Is quite a big venue for quite a long time. Venue,
yeah, but it is weird, yeah. Although I understand the technology is a lot better now. The problem I did the Royal Albert Hall on a benefit and some of these bigger stadiums, and they kind of, it's where the sound lands in the room and laughs going up into the thing and into the roof and you can't hear them. But I think they've got this digital technology now that corrects it. I think, you know, it's sort of, who knows what it'd be like.
Laugh acoustics.
Yeah.
Any more? Was it telly stuff you said you were working on for this?
Yeah, I did a TV series last year for BBC Two called Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle, and I'm doing a new one, filming it in January, and it'll go out in about April, and that's kind of, I'm generating all the material for that now.
You see, that's the other thing, isn't it? There is not desperation, and I certainly don't mean that to imply that in your company, but there is a thing with comedians now that television is the be all and end all, isn't it?
What you've seen happening that never happened 20 years ago is, you know, one appearance on Michael McIntyre's Roadshow, and people can do, you know, some people can do Hammersmith Apollo or whatever it's called now straight away. You know, it does seem to be that.
It's that powerful?
Yeah, it would seem to be. It hasn't made that. I mean, doing the BBC Two show in the middle of the night hasn't made that kind of difference to me. Plus, also, I think.
Well, that doesn't mean you can afford to live in Hackney.
Yeah, I've managed to stay. I've managed to hang on by the skin of my teeth to London. Yeah, it's totally different. I mean, but also people just kind of weren't into the idea of going out to comedy in those sort of events 20 years ago. It was like a little club thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's really amazing to watch what's happened, and it's quite interesting being in the middle of it all and seeing it happen around you. But I do wonder.
Of course, Leicester Square is not that theatre, but Leicester Square is where it all started. It's where the first Comedy Store was.
Yeah, it was around there, yeah. Comedy Store and the Comic Strip were all around the middle of Soho there. I mean, it's funny, I'm trying to write a half hour on the difference between comedy in the 80s and comedy now, and it is funny thinking about all those little rooms and all those people and the bills that you used to see, and yet how it's such a huge thing now.
Another difference, of course, is that certainly back in the early 80s, a lot of comedy was overtly political.
It was explicitly.
Is that
political.
Coming back, do you think? Is there any likelihood of that with students being revolting again and all?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like every day we're having a kind of a nostalgia fest for the 80s with student riots and cuts and graffiti saying Tory scum in the streets. The problem for people it's not as easy to do stuff about the government as it was 30 years ago, because the government we had 30 years ago seemed to enjoy being ridiculous caricatures, didn't they? You know, they kind of look like vampires and witches, and now there's a real anonymity to them, and it's much harder to get under the skin and work out what it is funny about them. Plus, you know, comedians now, there's a lot of money in being palatable. Right, which there wasn't, you know, for the alternative.
But that's very dangerous for any notion of comedy that thinks of itself as alternative.
I agree with you, yeah. But I think if you can do the Royal Royal Variety performance and get seen by millions of people, you can probably do Wembley. But you're not going to do the Royal Variety performance, causing for the dismantling of the state.
Well, tell that to Ben Elton. Actually,
well, Ben Elton went on a long, strange journey, didn't he? He went on a long, strange journey from
because I started my journey with Ben Elton. Him and I appeared on our first television show together on the
what
same
was that,
day.
Was that Oxford Road show?
Yeah, very, yeah. Very long time
great.
Ago.
I remember that. No, I remember, you know, you used to watch those for the comedy, you know, and they were the alternative comedy would pop up in little places. There'd be a bit on the Oxford Road show, bits on things like that, and you were really excited to see tiny little shards of it making their way onto television.
But I do wonder, it's very interesting that point you made about punk, whether comedy needs a bit of its own punk revolution if it has got a bit ELP.
Yeah, well, it
if
had, you know what I mean. I mean, 30 years ago it had one.
Yeah.
And I think it's it's sort of
But that has to be a regenerative process.
It has to regenerate. And although I think culturally we're in an odd position, right? And I hate to sound like an old fogey, and I'm only 42. God damn it! But I think that we're in a weird position where a lot of the culture of younger people is sort of more conservative.
It is, and very mainstream.
Very mainstream.
Yeah.
And it always used to be that your dad could not understand your music, whereas now I can understand 20-year-olds' music. I don't really like it, but yeah. I can understand it, but it doesn't confuse or offend me.
It's considerably more mainstream and middle of the road than our musical choices were.
And it's the same with comedy, it's the same with lots of things, same with television in lots of ways. So I think it is kind of weird as to where's this change going to come from, and will it be from people that are sitting in playing Call of Duty 2? Probably not.
Probably not.
Come on, kids. Get your act together.
Well, you've got your act together and people can go and see it. They can go to the Leicester Square Theatre until the 18th of December, which is quite a run. They can buy the DVD if you prefer a model comedian, please ask. And they can get tickets for Leicester Square from leicestersquaretheatre.com. Stuart Lee, thank you very, very
much. Thanks for having us.
Get back to Acne.